Hi there. A special shout out to our friend Ben Dansker, who isn't with us. You can catch the notes about what we said about you before the recording started. This is Jeff Sachs from Web Yeshiva and Mishkan Sipor in Efrat, and we are still learning Masechet Ta'anit. We are on Daf Kafhei Omud Aleph. We're in the middle of the stories of Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa. Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa, poor Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa, afflicted with poverty as he was, nevertheless was one of the great wonder workers in the Agadah, one of the Chassidim v'Anshei Ma'aseh, the men of great deeds. Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa, Havulei Hanach Ize. He had a couple of goats. Omrelei, they said to him, maybe his neighbors said to him, Kamafsedan, they are causing loss, they're causing damage, you know, probably to our fields or to our gardens. You know, that's the way goats are. You know, my wife, who has a kind of pastoral side to her, you know, always thinks it'd be nice if we had like a goat in the backyard. We wouldn't have to mow the lawn. I point out we wouldn't have to like do anything else in the Gina, because the goat would eat all the flowers and all the shrubs and everything else as well. You know, but you're not allowed to keep goats here, at least not in Efrat, or probably where any of you live. But he had a couple of goats, and the neighbors were complaining, you know, the goats get into our garden, they do whatever they do. So Amar, he replies to them, Ikamaf Sidan Nechlinu Dube. If in fact my goats are causing you damage, they should be devoured by bears. Let bears devour them. V'ilo, but if that's not the case, if your side of the story is not accurate, he doesn't accuse them of lying. But you know how it is, you know, with shchenim, with neighbors. You know, if I have a dog and you find in your backyard some residue from the dog, you might not be crazy to blame my mutt for causing that, although you might not have proof. So he says, look, if my goats are guilty, they should be eaten by bears. Ve'ilav, and if not, kol chada v'chada tete le'urta duba bekarnayhu. Let each of them bring a bear, you know, speared on their horns tonight. I don't know what you would do with a bear that had been speared by goat horns. Even very big goats are, you know, would probably have some trouble carrying a bear, you know, on their horns. But, you know, this is the nature of this Agadah. Meaning he says, we'll put it to the test. We'll leave it in God's hands. If my goats are guilty, the bears will get them. And if my poor goats have been falsely accused, they'll get the bears. And that very evening, each one of these goats brought a bear skewered on the horn. David, what are you sending us?
A video of a bear trying his luck against mountain goats.
Now, how did you find that one?
It's you know, part of the skills, I guess.
Can I get something just too, David?
It's in the chat. I mean, I don't want to interrupt the share. I'm just saying for your pleasure afterwards, you can view the...
Could you just email that to me?
It's in the chat. Let's see. Can we share this?
My email address, David.
That's a big goat. That's Taka a big goat. Let's see if I can share this. Share web browser. Share web browser.
We can see the browser.
Yeah, but you can't see YouTube, can you?
No, you're on the wrong tab, that's all.
Yeah, I know, I'm just trying to get the...
I see.
Well, it's like Jeff can just send me the link. David can send me the link.
No, I want to see it.
It's only
a lot of time for you.
Hold on a second. Let me get this. Problem is that this thing keeps covering it up.
The last slide.
Here you go. Now you can see it. Yeah.
Oh, there you go. Okay. Thank you so much for sending that. Oh my God.
Here,
so
let's look at this. So here are the goats, and there's the bear. See, that's Taka, a big goat.
And it's a small bear.
And it's a small bear.
Very small bear. It's hard to see how it even qualifies as a bear from where I'm looking.
Yeah, so the goats run away. There's no bear being mauled here.
You want to ask so what he has is one. Thank you so much, David.
A false promise.
So the goat already ate the bear.
The goats bring the bear. Havale hahi shivafta de ka banya beta. Chanina Mendoza had a neighbor who was building a house. Velo matu kishure. But the beams, I don't know exactly how this was. And David, don't even look for the video on this one. There's only so much Bittelsmann we could have. The beams.
I'll give you a video of the
roof. And you know how houses were built, right? They were flat roofed houses. As you put up four walls, like a Lego, and then you have beams that go across. The beams lay across, you know, the parallel walls longer than the walls. And then on top of that, you put the roofing. Like the way we build our sukkahs, right? You know, you put up the frame, and then you put up the poles, and you put the schach on top of that. But the beams, the roof beams, were not long enough to get to be able to, if they can't reach the other side, they fall down and the roof isn't going to work. So his neighbor had, you know, I guess my father used to teach me. My father was very handy. You know how it is; these things skip generations. If your father was not handy with tools or things around the house, so then you learn how to be. So, but in my case, it was the opposite. My father was handy, and I never learned how to do it. My father didn't know how to cook so much. And that he wasn't so skilled. And my mother made sure that I learned those kinds of domestic things because she didn't want me to be one of those husbands who, you know, couldn't do anything for himself in the kitchen. But my father did teach me the important rule in, you know, woodworking and other things. Measure twice, cut once. Huh? In other words, if you have to measure something to fit, and you mismeasure it, and you cut it, you know, just a centimeter too short, the whole thing's not going to work. So measure twice, cut once. Because if you measure twice, you have a backup. You're checking your work to make sure that you haven't miscalculated how long the 2x4 should be, whatever it is. So this guy must have not done that, and the beams were too short to support the roof of his house. Atila Kame, so he goes to Rebchinina Mendoza. Omrele, baniti bayit. She, this neighbor is building a house as a woman. Omrele, she says to him, baniti veti, velo kamtu kishurai. I built a house, but the beams are too short. They don't extend far enough. Omrele, he says to her, mashmech, what's your name? Omrele Iku. Her name was Iku. It's not clear to me that this woman is even Jewish, but her name was Iku. Amar Iku Nimtu Kishurayich. This is Iku, Imkain. Now this is like he makes a play on word on her name. Imkain, so then the beams of your house should grow, they should be stretched, they should be extended. So Tana. So not only did they reach the parallel walls, but they stuck out. They were in Amma, you know, about a yard on this side and a yard on that side. They had stretched so long. So some say I lost my place. Some say snifinasuan. So some say that they had like a sniff added onto them, like something was tacked onto the beams to make them longer. You know, like if you need like a 3 foot beam and you have a 2.5 foot beam and then you screw on an extra half a foot, so then you have an extra. So Tanya Palyamo Omer, Palyamo was a Tana who appears from time to time. He has this kind of Greek sounding name. So he says, Ani ra'iti oto bayit. I saw that house. Vahavu korotav yotzot amalakan va'amalakan. In other words, the Gemara says, well, maybe it was a miracle happened, that the beam stretched. The Gemara says, no, maybe it was just a carpentry job that he did, you know, by adding on a little bit of extra wood. So Palyamo says, no, I saw it. It really stretched out. It was a miracle. But Amru Li, the Bayet Zeh, Shekira Rebbe Chanina Ben Dosa B'Tfilato. And they said about this house, that, you know, like that you pass the house and it would say, George Washington slept here. You pass this house, you say, this is the house that the prayers of Chanina Ben Dosa miraculously allowed the beams to hold up the roof. So now the Gemara asks a good question. Wait a second. Those miracle goats of... Yes? Yes, Yehudi?
I'm just reading in a current version that they think Palaimo comes from a Greek word meaning old, and that would then basically explain how he was able to remember something that happened so long ago. He lived long enough to tell the tale.
Oh, okay, but he doesn't say that he remembered the tale. It says that he saw the house.
Right, so I'm saying he had to get pretty old in order to know. He's telling that to a subsequent generation.
Right, but so if he could have seen the house
that, that I was alive at the time that Hitler committed suicide.
Okay, of all the things to date yourself. Well,
best news we heard, you have to basically realize what the circumstances were growing up in the Second World War. Okay, yeah. You know, at the time, everybody was dancing in the streets. Yeah. Okay, but what I'm trying to get across is that I was old enough at that time to remember dancing in the streets. So the coroner's trying to tell you that the name of this man meant live to a ripe old age.
But what do we know about when did he live in relation to Chanina Mendoza?
I don't know, but it's clear that, in other words, if they're making the point, they must know this. In other words, remember, Chanina Mendoza is from the time of Yochanan and Zakkai. So we're basically going, you know, a person who saw it could very well be a Tana. But remember, we don't call him Rav Palyamo, so he must have come from an earlier generation. Mendoza.
Yeah.
It was at that time, very, very few people. The title of Rav was not a routine title, like it became after the Churban. It was just for a very small handful of individuals. You know, it wasn't something that you would automatically use for everybody who reached a certain point.
I mean, it's easy enough to try to, I'm sure we can find out when did he live in relation to Chanina Mendoza. But I had understood the Gemara to mean, you know, with no knowledge whatsoever, the example I gave of, look, I lived. I saw, you know, not far from where I lived, there was one of these houses in Rahway, New Jersey. You know, New Jersey was the crossroads of the revolution. And there was a house.
Yeah, I got your answer. Palaimo, the Rav Yehuda Hanasi. So obviously this is one of
these. He lived when? Say again.
I'm reading Koran. I'm reading word for word. The sage Palaimo, a disciple of Rav Yehuda Hanasi, is sometimes presented as asking his teacher questions of halacha, although he also engages in disputes with Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi's colleague, Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon. Okay?
So he's a Talmid of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi.
Yeah, but he's still considered a Tana because
he's a late Tana. So when does he live?
Right, so more to come. I'm reading one more thing. Some of his halachic rulings appear in Breitot, while many stories are related about his great piety. So then it was that that house probably was destroyed during the Bar Kokhba revolt. So more likely than not, he's trying to tell you that he lived long enough to have seen it when he was a little boy.
Why do you assume that?
Because it is something. I'm just having a good time. You know, listen, once in a while.
But wait, so again, when did he live in relation to?
Rav Chaim Gotha lived at the time of around the Korban.
So
about 100 years.
Student Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, so figure it out. A student of Yochanan and Zakkai is somebody who's flourishing sometime around the turn of the first century, let's say 100 CE.
So about a century.
Yochanan and Zakkai died in 80 CE.
Okay, so
now
so, about a century later.
So that works.
Okay, again, I'm not sure why you have to say, in other words, it could be that that's the meaning of his name. But it doesn't necessarily mean that. The house that he saw, whenever he saw it, either in his youth or in his old age, was already an old house.
Yeah, I was just throwing it up.
Okay, fine. Let's go, Vaiter.
By all means, Vaiter.
So the Gemara asks, where did he have those goats from? V'ha'ani have. He was a very poor man, and he was so poor. I mean, he was so poor they didn't have food. If they didn't have food, they could have had either cheese or goat meat or something. You know, goats are good for some things. Although presumably some of them must have been billy goats if they were big enough and strong enough to bore a bear. And billy goats don't tend to give much milk. So he was poor. Where did he have these goats? V'odam ruch hachamim. Ein megadlin behema daka be'eretz Yisrael. At a certain point, Chazal made a takana that you can't keep goats or sheep. At least not. It was not a universal takana. There were certainly very many exceptions to the rules that you can't keep goats or sheep if you live kind of in a. Look, if you're a farmer, if you're a shepherd, obviously you have goats or sheep. And shepherding was obviously a Jewish trade. But if you live in a kind of town, you're not allowed to keep goats or sheep because they cause so much damage. Which is, by the way, you know, today there are people that have goats and sheep. But in Efrat, the zoning is such that we're not allowed to have goats or sheep or chickens or other things. But there are places not far away from here where people do keep such animals in their homes. But Chazal made a takana that in many places, in certain many circumstances, you're not allowed to even own goats. So how does Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa, A, afford goats, and B, keep goats in contradiction to this takana? Omar Rav Pinchas, ma'aseh v'avar adam echad al petach beito. It happened once that somebody was passing Chanina Mendoza's little house. V'hiniach sham tarnagolin. And he left behind some chickens. U'matza'an ishto shel Rabbi Chanina Mendoza. Kind of like Hashavat Aveda. Somebody left a chicken behind in his house. You think it was really Hashavat Aveda? You think it was really like somebody had lost a chicken? What might it have been?
He was very poor. Maybe they were trying to give him some food.
Yeah, maybe it was like matan beseter.
He never would have come back to look for it if that was the case. That doesn't fit the rest of the story.
Except what? What was Chanina Mendoza allowed to do in the meantime? Ikar Hadin?
Get the parrot?
He's allowed to eat the eggs.
Right, that's the parrot.
A chicken is the gift that keeps giving. Every day you get another egg.
So
I have a chicken. I don't need my chicken right now. I'm not going to give him my chicken, but I'll let him hold on to the chicken. And every day he'll have an egg to eat. So Omrele, Vamrela, Al tochli mi beitzehen. Don't eat those eggs, he told his wife. And they were, again, you remember, they were people that could have used a good omelet. They hear bu beitzim, the tarnagolin. So what happens if you don't eat the eggs? You get more chickens. Vahayumit sa'arinotan. They had so many chickens, it was a headache. You know, one chicken is nice. Lots of chickens becomes a headache. They make noise. They have to be fed. they make a mess. Umacharan v'kana b'demehen izin. So he sells the chickens and he buys with the money that he gets for those chickens that all came from one or two chickens. He buys. That's where he got the goats. Now that you are allowed to do. In other words, if you are a shomer of an object, particularly a living object, that you have the responsibility because of Hashavat Aveda, you're allowed to sell the object if you're not able to care for it, particularly if it's livestock. Because in other words, livestock, if I'm watching, like when your neighbor goes away and asks you to watch the dog or asks you to watch the kid's hamster or something like that, they don't expect you to feed the animal. They bring the food with you, right? That wouldn't be, you know, reasonable to do. So you have a responsibility as a shomer of the animal because of the responsibility to guard somebody else's lost object. But you don't have to become impoverished yourself in feeding those chickens and feeding those animals. So he's got so many, the chickens have multiplied. He can't keep them all. So he sells whatever he had, 20 chickens, and he buys himself a couple of goats. He transfers the value of the chickens onto the goat. The goat is still the property of the person who lost the chickens. But it's just easier for him to take it. So that's how he had these goats. They weren't really his. Pamachat avar oto adam she'avdu mimenu hatarnagolin. So the person who had lost the chickens comes by va'amar lechaveru bechan hinachti hatarnagolin sheli. He says, oh, this is where I left my goat. As he's passing by, and suddenly he remembers, this is where I misplaced my chicken. Shama Rabbi Chanina amar lo yesh lecha ben siman. Do you have some kind of identifying mark, which is the manner in which we return a lost object? The owner has to give some kind of evidence or proof that it, in fact, was his. Omar Lohen, Natano Siman v'natale ta'izin. I wonder what the Siman on the chicken was. What do you think it could have been?
Or to the point, how could you check it if you sold the chickens?
No, but he remembers. In other words, if you give me a dog, right? So I'll remember the dog had a brown spot above its left ear.
Okay. Got it.
Right? Even if the dog is
noticeable, yes, absolutely.
So I don't know, but to me, all chickens look alike. But Mistama, there was some. Siman. It's interesting that the Agadah does not trouble itself to tell us what the siman was. You know, like if you're constructing a story from a literary point of view, if you're constructing a piece of Agadah, right? It might have been interesting to say what the siman on this chicken was, particularly if that siman was somehow symbolically resonant with larger themes in the story. But the Gemara does not do that. The hein hein izay the aitu dube bekarnayu. And those very goats that he had in his possession were the very goats that had impaled the bears on their horns. And that's the story of Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa. But we have to ask
that we satisfy the question of Ein Regablin Behemoth.com.
Yeah, the Gemara.
He's not his own, but still he's doing damage to other people's
right, so, well, no. In other words, the miracle of the bears proves that his goats were falsely accused. Right? Remember, that's what he says. He says if...
But that still doesn't allow him to proceed. In other words, when he bought them, he didn't know that there was going to end up being a miracle afterwards, and his goats were not going to bother anybody. In other words, l'chatchila, why did he buy something like that in the first place? He could have sold chickens and bought animals that are permitted to be raised in Eretz Yisrael.
It doesn't say that he bought them. He says that he got them.
He got the chickens.
Why did he allow them into his property or his home?
They weren't trading the responsibility as a shomer for them. So some say that either he lived in a place where the takana did not apply. Now, in other words, if you live in a place that the takana does not apply, that's if you live in a more rural area where the takana did not apply, or if you live in or on the
edge. Why does the Gemara give that answer?
It doesn't give any answer at all.
Oh, no, it does give you an answer. The answer being what you said, that they're not his property.
No, but I'm not sure if that's true. In other
you're
words,
watching somebody else's property.
In other words, if I live in a place where I'm not allowed to raise goats, and somebody asks me to watch their goats for them, I'm not sure.
I tell them I can't do that because of the fact that I live
in the local. The local zoning law does not allow me to have goats. You can't claim when they come to give you a ticket. You can't claim I don't own the goats. Right? Right. They're just I'm just watching them. That's not the point of the takana. The takana is you can't have goats because they're going to cause damage. Anyway, so some say that the takana didn't apply there. In other words, even in places where the takana does not apply, and even in times before the institution of the takana, if becholzot you have goats and they cause damage, you're chayav to pay the nezikin. Right? In other words, it's not that like you went off scot-free. Before the takana said, you know, you can't even though obviously if your goats cause damage, you have to pay the damages, right? The takana comes to say, even if you're prepared to pay the damages, you're not allowed to have the goats because they are so likely to cause damage that we don't want anyone to have them at all. So it's not clear that the Gemara actually answers the question. It's not clear. I saw some, I'm forgetting where it was, maybe in the Marashah, who says that the takana did not apply, and that the Gemara somehow, you know, doesn't mention it here. Really, it should. Something like that.
Last week, you were going to talk about the significance of this whole collection of Chanina ben Dosa.
Yes, so that's what I'm about to do.
Oh, good, good.
Although these are sources, I know, Yehudi, that you have a certain orientation in your analysis of Agadah, and these may not be to your liking, but these are the ideas that I'm going to present. If you have other ideas, we're always happy to hear what you have to say. First of all, last week we did discuss the idea of like what was it about Rabbi Chanina Mendoza that made him have this ability to perform these wonder acts or to have these miracles. You know, remember the story last week with the bread in the oven. You know, they were so poor, but so that his wife shouldn't be embarrassed, the oven fills with baking dough that has to be taken out with the David. What was the word for the shovel?
You know, we ended up calling it a paddle, a pizza paddle.
A pizza.
That's a paddle.
But the question of benefiting from miracles, it seems that Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa doesn't want to benefit from the miracles. He tells his wife, don't eat any of those eggs. In the case where his daughter lights, by accident, she lights a bowl full of vinegar instead of oil for Shabbos candles, and a miracle happens vinegar burns the whole Shabbos, and it burns so long that they're able to say Havdalah over those candles. Rabbi Chanina's answer to her is that you have to have like a little faith, right? Just like God can make oil burn, if He wants, He can make vinegar burn. So when in the other case of the story about the beams of the house, according to the simple understanding of the Gemara, that the bracha that he gives her, that they should stretch, you know, this play on words with her name. So all of these stories raise questions that the Gemara elsewhere says you really. Not only shouldn't you rely on miracles, but if possible, you shouldn't benefit from miracles. So the question is, how does Rabbi Chanina Mendoza benefit from all of these miraculous occasions? So there are a number of answers that are given. Rashi goes to some pains to say that Rabbi Chanina Mendoza, in fact, does not get any benefit from the vinegar candles. Tzvi, just mute yourself there.
Sorry. I need...
so that he didn't actually get any benefit from the candles. And what he must mean is that, it's a little stretched, that that instead of saying Havdalah over those candles, he lit another candle. Either it means that he, that they, to say that they lasted until Havdalah is just a time marker, and then he lit a regular Havdalah candle, or that it means that he lit a candle off of that candle in order to say Havdalah. You know, in general, generally
says speaking,
right. So,
right,
so what that means is that he didn't say Bremerish on those candles, but lit a different candle off of them. Now, generally speaking, you know that the candle that you say Havdalah over should be a new flame, as opposed to Motzei Yom Kippur, when the minhag is to say the Borei Mirei Ha'esh over a ner sheshavat, a ner, a candle that was lit and stayed lit over the whole Yom Kippur. On Motzei Shabbat, the minhag, the halacha really, is to say Havdalah over a newly lit candle. This is based upon a midrashic idea that on the first Motzei Shabbat after Gan Eden, that's when, you know, the Jewish Prometheus myth occurs, that Hashem shows Adam HaRishon how to use fire. And that's what we're commemorating on Motzei Shabbat with Havdalah. So if you had a candle, let's say you had a yard site on a Shabbat, and you know the yard site candles, I think the yard site candles are bigger than they used to be. Like everything gets bigger. Like the Kazayat got bigger, and the Kiddush cup got bigger, and the yard site candle got bigger. So we had a yard site not long ago, and we had, you know, now they have like the just like the regular size yard site candle that says Dolek Esrim Barba Shaot, 24 hours. It lasted for almost 36.
Right.
So it happens if you have a yard site on Shabbos, by the time you come to Havdalah, lots of times that yard site candle is still burning. You should not say Havdalah over that candle. So, anyways,
that seems to be an average. There's some 24-hour candles that only burn for 20 hours.
Really, you get the cheap ones.
Well, I don't know.
I'll tell you which.
Rami Levy.
I'll tell you which brand I get. They're better candles.
I heard that the reason for this was that you have to start a new light on Motzei Shabbat because the world was created on Motzei Shabbat. You know, by Hier, by Boca, according to the rabbinic take on it, yep. Not according to the Pshat. It means that the whole thing started in the middle of the night, so to speak. Yep. You know, so that's why on Motzei Shabbat, you have to start a new one. Whereas I'm going to say the whole point of Rosh Hashanah is to make clear that what we're doing here is only saying that now we're allowed to light a candle, but not because this is when the oil was created in the first place. That's what was in Rosh Hashanah.
That's not what the Midrash says, and that's not what the Halacha quotes. The Halacha quotes this idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu on the first Motzei Shabbat, meaning a week after Briat Olam, Hashem taught Adam how to make fire. But so Rav Yaakov Emdin, you know, is not so crazy about this Rashi, and he offers a different interpretation, which is also, I'm not sure, answers the whole question. But he says that on Friday night, when they were sitting there, and those candles were burning, so obviously Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa got some benefit from these miracle candles of the vinegar candles. In other words, that's all Shabbat candles do is give benefit. You know, there's a special gzeira against reading by the candlelight of Shabbos candles. But in the ancient world, the candles that you lit Friday night were the candles that illuminated the house. We have a problem because our Shabbos candles don't really do much. They're just a drop in the ocean compared to our electric lights. And there's all different types of halakhic. You know, including like the fervor that some people have to, you know, to really dim the lights in the house so that the Shabbat candles offer some real benefit. But we're so accustomed to electric lighting that very few of us would be able to manage just by candlelight, certainly not at our advanced age. When we were very young and newlyweds before we had kids, Friday night, sometimes we would eat by candlelight. And then we would set the Shabbat clock to come on later, the Shabbat clock in the house to come on later, so that when we were getting ready for bed or cleaning up, you know, there was proper light in the house. But Friday night, we would sometimes eat, you know, largely by candlelight, so that we would yotze kol adeot to have Friday night by candlelight. Now that
we had that happen to us once. I think the kid, it was Shabbat where the kids were still in America. It was just the two of us or something, and we did an early Shabbat, which you don't usually do. But we didn't have that much food to make, and it was in the summer. We did early Shabbat. We never did early Shabbat, and we just forgot to turn the lights on in the living room just because it was you know daylight. So it was a good thing to have the candle. That's all we had.
It was romantic.
Actually, being in Efrat, I am sure that at least once or twice or many more times.
A couple times in the winter.
We lost electric on Friday night and the candles were lit.
Yeah, right. So then you're a yotze that time. Some people have a minhag that when the woman lights, some people have the practice that they turn off the lights. You know, let's say generally you light like in or near the dining room or the kitchen. So that they dim the lights so that when the woman is lighting the candle, the light actually is doing something. And then before turns the lights back on, but at least at the time that she said the bracha. Occasional empty nesterhood. It's very gradual. I felt like empty nesthood would come and like grab us right away. It seems that it's a much more gradual process.
And then it goes away.
Yeah. Because the grandchildren come. But that's you happy when the grandchildren come. Yeah. But because they go back to their parents at the end. So now that we're gradually easing into semi empty nesthood, if we were to go back to doing this Friday night candle thing, we're so old, we'd be like blind bats. We wouldn't be able to see a thing in just by the candlelight.
There's an interesting phenomena. And when we lived in Yerushalayim, we lived in a place which, you know, was mixed. It was, you know, frum and non-frum people. And if there was a blackout like during the week, you saw the first houses that had light in the windows from the candles were the ones that, you know, that were religious, that knew exactly where the candles were and they lit them. And the other ones like came afterwards.
Interesting. Anyway, so let's just go back to this. So Yaakov Emden says that Rashi must mean that Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa's wife, had lit other. These weren't the only candles in the house, because otherwise it would mean that Takahi was benefiting from the miracle. And when Rabbi Chanina made the roof beams stretch, he himself, that's not a problem. He was the agent of the miracle. I mean, ultimately, God does the miracles, right? Not Rabbi Chanina, but through Rabbi Chanina's prayer and piety, he was able to call down God's miracle on this woman. But it wasn't his house. He wasn't benefiting from it. It was this poor woman, and she doesn't have to be mine. This idea of not benefiting from a miracle, that's a mark of piety. That's for the Chassidim Anshei Maisa, not for this simple woman who did not need to conduct herself with that extra mark of of piety. So, you know, but then Yaakov Emden says Rashi's idea that Rabbi Chanina would never benefit from a miracle then calls into question the pizza paddle. But all that bread that was in the oven, what's she doing? She's rushing to take it out of the oven so that it shouldn't burn. But if they're not going to get any benefit from it, what difference does it make whether or not it burns?
It burns fire, like a toaster. If the toast burns, it could eventually end up causing a fire in the house.
But it seems obviously, I mean, there's no record that she tells it. Unlike the eggs, it doesn't seem that that he tells her, you know, you have to throw away the bread. Mistama, they ate it. It's also interesting.
But that's the reason so much to tell you that they ate it, because if that was the point, they'd say it. I think the point is to show this neighbor that, these people are a real deal, you know.
Right, so that was my question on what Rav Yaakov Emden says, because what does it say? Mrs. Dosa sees that the neighbor, this nosy neighbor, this Yenta, is coming to the house. And she's embarrassed, because she doesn't have anything cooking for Erev Shabbos. So she goes to hide in the other room. When the miracle happens and the stove gets full of bread, so that the neighbor, you know, is kind of fooled, she says, oh, you better bring the pizza paddle to get all this bread out of the oven before it burns. And then Mrs. Bendosa says, oh, yes, that's what I had gone to the other room for. So maybe that was just a cover. You know, to protect to protect the cover story of where she was. Or maybe she really was going to get it because she was going to take the.
Does it ever happen that a relatively wealthy person, such as Rabbi Elazar ben Azarya or Rav Tarfon, succeeds in bringing the rain? Don't you get the feeling that absolute one of the qualifications for success is to be aniyim rudim, and in other words, meaning that basically the rain is really critical for you because you have nothing stored up whatsoever, and if something doesn't show up, you're going to stop. So you're going to pray hard. So you're pray with the utmost kavanah a person could possibly pray. I mean, in other words. Otherwise, you could say another thing about these stories, which is, I hope that you don't mind if I quote something from the Gospels. Is that all right?
Sure.
All right. It is easier for a camel to get through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to find favor in the eyes of the Lord.
Yeah. Maybe. I mean, is there any evidence that...
First century statement.
You know, but is there any evidence that, let's say, Choni was poor?
No, but you just get to, in other words, as you read these stories, you can't, you know, the whole enterprise, every person that you find anything out about their economic circumstances is dirt poor. And the Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat is going to be double dirt poor.
Seems
to be a theme going through all these stories. And people who are doing the praying are dirt poor. They don't have a thing in their houses. There's nothing, zip, you know? And so the next thing, it's like the Almana of Elio. He has to give her a crust. He has her for a crust of bread. And she says to him, I'll give you this crust, but understand I was planning to sit down with my son tonight for our last supper, because after this crust is gone, there is nothing left. In other words, this is a Tanakh's inspiration already.
Yehudi, by the way, just so if you want to feel more comfortable in the future, that quote has sources in the Gemara and the Midrash. So if you prefer quoting the Gemara in Brachot or in the Midrash Shir Rabbah, you can quote that instead of the Gospels.
But if I had known that, I would have. But what I wanted to know was, is it okay altogether in class to quote something?
So
let's
That's
just what I really meant.
Tzadok HaKohen in the Prit Tzadik says something which is a kind of a well-worn idea, but it's worth repeating. That, like this, what does Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa mean when he tells his daughter, oh, well, I mean, you know, it's not a big deal for vinegar to burn, right? After all, olive oil burns. So, I mean, from a chemical point of view, from a scientific point of view, this makes no sense. The properties of oil are such that they burn, and the properties of vinegar are such that it doesn't burn. So it's a kind of nonsensical thing to say. Like God created the world, and he created the world in such a way that certain things have certain physical properties and other things have different physical properties. But Tzadok says that ultimately, it's just a question of understanding. It was the whole orientation towards how miracles work. Miracles, which after all are some kind of deviation of the way the state of nature functions in a normal sense, is understanding that Really, everything is miraculous. The fact that oil burns and that vinegar normally does not burn is really no more miraculous, or less miraculous, I should say, than the fact that vinegar could burn if that's the way God wanted it to work out. Normally, crusts of bread do not multiply themselves. Normally, one vial of oil does not last 8 days. But if God should will it, then that is the case. And if you appreciate that the everyday, the so-called non-miraculous, is also miraculous, so then you understand that anything could be. And he relates this idea to the notion that in the future, we won't have two brachot, Baruch Dayan HaEmet and Hatova Meitiv. Right? The idea that Kishem Shem Mevarchim Al Hara, Kishem Shem Mevarchim Al HaTov, Kein Mevarchim Al Hara'a, that is a bracha for good news, there's a bracha for bad news, and they're two different brachot, are because we experience the world through different prisms. But ultimately, in a world of I don't know, undiluted emunah, so one would come to a realization that everything God does is for the best. Now, we don't experience the world that way. And in fact, there's some value. Rabbi Tzadok doesn't say this. I'm saying this. There's some value in the fact that we don't experience the world that way, because it leads to sometimes very immoral positions. If you think that everything is the way it's supposed to be, so then you should never give charity, because that poor person deserves to be poor. Obviously, if he's poor, you know, that's the way God wills it, and therefore I don't need to do anything. If there's illness in the world, I don't need to seek a cure. Anybody who's spent any 10 minutes reading The Lonely Man of Faith understands that this goes counter to our authentic Jewish worldview.
I just finished on Shabbat reading Yoni Grossman's latest book on Yosef. It's a 600-page book discussing all of life of Yosef, and that's one of the major things he's discussing is Yosef was saying, you know, can you change these things? You know, Paro has a dream and it's supposed to be a certain way, and you know, the way that most people would say, well, that's just the way it's going to be. There's going to be famine and that's it. And Yosef was willing to say there wasn't going to be that way. And he ends the book discussing that exact point about talking about the comparison between Yaakov Avinu saying, Atachat Elokim Anochi to Rachel, and him saying, Tachat Elokim Ani to his brothers. And how do we view ourselves in the place of God? It's very much in line with what you're saying.
Yaakov, Ani Kasher Shacholti Shacholti.
Right. So that, you know, that's Reb Tzadok. I mean, I think it says more about Reb Tzadok than it says about Rabbi Chanina Mendoza, but that's one way of viewing this. We'll pause here. Next week we'll come to the even more poverty-stricken Elazar ben Pedat, Dechikale Milta Tuva. He was really in a bad spot. So that's next week. And then following next week, I will be away for 2 weeks. The first two Tuesdays in July, we will not have shiur, but we will have a shiur next week. We'll start Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat. Okay.
Thank you
very much, Rabbi.
Bye.
Oh, yeah.